Well, again, thank you for joining us today, and God bless you for being here on this really, really cool day. It's called Easter. I remember when I grew up, Easter was anything but church. Well, I shouldn't say that. There was always church, but church just wasn't the deal. I can remember getting one of my wonderful spankings from Harry Monroe Mewburn Jr. From him because I didn't know how to tie a tie. Only tied it once a year, for crying out loud. But he had six boys. He probably got tired of teaching us, you know, so I got a spanking for all of that. But it was really cool. We'd go to my grandmother's house, and there was always this incredible feast and the Easter egg hunt. And we had all kinds of cousins and stuff. It became an Easter egg free-for-all. And, you know, usually blood was shed doing that. You know, it was amazing. But today we're here to celebrate the cross of Jesus Christ. Regardless of how involved you are, regardless of how grown up you are, regardless of how little you are, and regardless of how long you've been in church, the cross is something we all know about. We celebrate Easter once a year, we celebrate Christmas once a year, but the cross, it's an emblem, it's a symbol that's always out there before us. Matter of fact, it's probably the most important part of our history because history pivots around the cross. We even mark time by the cross. There's the B.C., before Christ, and A.D., after death. We mark our calendars by this person named Jesus Christ that died on a cross. And the Bible, just like most great biographies, fills in all the blanks. You have all the story. You know how it began. You have the history even before Jesus came to earth. You know how God created everything. You know how it was all formed, and it developed all through the prophets and through the Old Testament into the New Testament. And then we have the story of Jesus and all the things that happened during his ministry and then ultimately his death, his crucifixion on the cross. And then as we look at that also, you understand that there's the after the cross story. You see, we have the benefit of knowing through the Bible and its story, this tremendous biography, that there was a history yet to be lived. There is a future after the cross. But what if you were a part of that biography? What if you had never known? What if you were there in that day? And it's almost impossible. I don't care how much you allow your imagination to be gifted with any type of thoughts or music or story or reading the Bible itself to project yourself into that story. But what if you were a part of that story and you didn't know that Jesus wasn't coming back? I believe then it would be a much different story. I believe it would be a much different story indeed.
Have a hard time believing it happened. Have you ever had something seemingly greater than life itself taken from you? That's how it felt on that day. Everything good, everything right, everything that made sense, died. Since the moment he first called me to follow him, my life had purpose. I was just Thomas until I met him. Then I had a reason to live, to believe, and then it was gone. I thought for sure somehow all this was going to stop. I had seen him perform many miracles before, and I thought surely he would do one more miracle and keep himself from dying. But then he said, "It is finished," and died. I couldn't believe it. It was like I had 1,000,000 pounds on my chest. I struggled to get any air. All that I had known, all that I was, all that was within me, died that day.
I was there as well. Many of us followed him from Galilee, assisting the disciples wherever they needed it. I often found myself in the company of Mary Magdalene and the Lord's own mother, Mary. Although there were many of us, we all felt valued and special. When you looked into his eyes, when you listened to what he said, there was hope. Finally, after so many years, there was hope. He changed so many lives. He healed the sick. He reached out to the lost. He changed so many lives, including my own. Suddenly, it seemed everything changed. Oh, there were always those who opposed him, but then they came and they took him. And they beat him, and they mocked him. And when I watched them crucify him, something in me died that day. That blessed hope that I had found died with him. I was so lost, so alone, and I knew it would never be the same again.
We both followed him, and on that day, as we walked to Emmaus, it became clear that his death would leave a huge void in our lives.
Well, it was easy to follow him, especially at first. The things that he was doing I'd never seen or heard before. But I'll never forget the day that he took just a few loaves and some fish from a young boy's lunch and fed thousands of people. But as time went on, we realized that was only the beginning.
Remember when he healed a man who had been blind from birth? He touched a man with leprosy, and he was immediately healed. He raised the ruler's daughter from the dead, and he raised Lazarus too.
And who but God himself could do these things? But yet, it was his words that spoke to me. They were just spoken with such power and authority.
We had such great hopes, not only for ourselves, but for Israel. We really believed that he would redeem all our people. But every minute that goes by only reminds us that everything we've ever wanted, everything we had in him, is gone.
We tried to regain our lives, tried to go about what was normal. But ever since meeting him, nothing was normal. And now that he's gone, nothing would ever be normal again.
Well, out of the Bible looms the devastation of the disciples as they lost their Lord and Savior. Many of them followed him because he was a rabbi, he was a teacher. Obviously, beyond just the 12 disciples that you and I think of, there were thousands that followed him. When he began to start doing his miracles, the feeding the 5,000, began to see literally people's lives changed. I got to tell you, if I was a relative of any of those that were touched, like the young man in the temple who they thought was possessed by a demon, Jesus touched him. I would be proclaiming who this man was. There would be people I'd be grabbing by the hand and say, "You must come and see this Jesus." But yet, for us today, it's just so difficult to just put it in that context. It's very difficult. But we do know what loss is. Every one of us here has experienced loss. Some of you have lost a job. That's not a fun experience, is it? I've been there. Some of you have lost your health. You've been sick. Some of you have lost many parts of your health that will never be regained. Some of you have lost a loved one. You know, very often I want to tell someone when I'm ministering to them as a pastor or a preacher or during the funeral service, I'm quick to remind them that I've not lost a mother and father. I've not lost a sibling. I've not lost a son or a daughter. I've lost grandparents. And I just don't want them to think that I know what they're going through, because I don't. But we all know what loss is. But the problem with loss is that once you lose hope, it's far beyond anything you could hold in your hands or something you would return to at home. And you said, I used to walk into this place yesterday, but now today it's ashes. It burnt overnight. That's a whole different loss. Those things can be replaced. I remember my dad with five boys and all kinds of things breaking all over the place as we were growing up, and we helped a lot in that area. He often said, listen, we can replace that, but we can't replace you. But hope is that way as well. Because when you lose hope, you lose everything that you had. You lose everything that you have. And worst of all, you lose everything that you might have in the future, because it just extinguishes everything within you that hopes that maybe tomorrow will be better than today. I think maybe the only thing worse than that is never having hope at all. Because sometimes it's not measured by what you lost, but it's measured by what you never had.
Well, my life before Christ didn't even have him involved. I grew up in a non-Christian environment, and I didn't find out until after my dad passed away that he was a certified Baptist preacher. I had no idea. When I was 15, my dad was diagnosed with cancer, and I had to go to the hospital a lot at midnight. I became an insomniac because I never knew when my mom was going to come up and wake us up and go to the hospital for an emergency. We moved to Pennsylvania to be with my mom's parents. And I started my senior year there, and he passed away in the middle of that year.
I think about when I was 11 years old, and you know, that was when I really got drunk heavily for the first time. I grew up very fast in my family, and the next several years were really a blur.
At that time, my mom was having a really hard time adjusting to life without my dad, as we all were. Right before Christmas time, she decided she was done and, you know, took a lot of sleeping pills.
At church, we were one family, and then at home, it was a whole different thing, because dad was drinking, and he was very abusive to my mom. And so I kind of grew up with this vision of church being a very hypocritical thing you kind of had to do, you know. By the time I was 16, I had lived in 17 different homes.
I knew who God was, but every time we talked about God, he was on the other side of the world helping somebody in a big tragedy, earthquake victims, tidal wave victims, that sort of thing. I just didn't think he was for me.
I found myself living in a drug house, and it was just always there. You know, my sister was engaged to the biggest drug dealer in town, and so, you know, whatever he had, I tried. And I kind of came up with the idea that I'll try anything once. There wasn't anything at that point that was off limits. And so we partied a lot. You know, what was the point of even hoping? But I knew I didn't want that.
I knew that some of the things that I was starting to get involved in were not right. And I just kept thinking, this isn't the path that I needed to be on. I ended up getting engaged to a guy when I was 22. And we ended up in a very abusive relationship with each other, and to the point where I was trying to kill each other. And I just remember just feeling I was heading down the wrong path and of no return.
Played football, track, weightlifting, poured myself into that because that was an escape. It was a place where I was cool. I had friends. You know, it wasn't somewhere I had to be afraid.
The way I describe my life before Christ is I was empty, and I knew it, but it didn't entice me at all to pursue God in a way that would change my life.
You ask me what my life was like. It was hell. I can remember the sound of my mom's screams. Been a long time. Eventually she would pass out, or he would.
When my dad left my mom, it was hard on our family. It was hard on all the kids, and me especially too. My mom would take us to church, and I wouldn't get anything out of it. I was there to put on the mask, put on the show.
I really don't remember a time when Christ wasn't a part of my life. I know who he was when I walked away from him and then when I came back.
I ended up getting involved with the wrong people, the wrong kids, the doing the wrong things.
Start hanging out with friends, you know, partying, and didn't realize I walked away from God.
I mean, I really didn't even think about the future. I was living for the moment. I wasn't thinking about the next day.
Some things happened in my life, along with work and everything else going on in the world. Didn't know what to do.
He was ready to walk away, and I was ready to walk away.
I was on my way to put an end to all the trouble and all the pain. Well, the darkest hours of my life.
I didn't have a passion towards anything. I just existed.
You know, I'm seeking for, I guess, approval or belongings, you know. I know deep inside of me, I'm wanting something different. You know, maybe that will put an end to the emptiness that I've been, you know, looking, or the emptiness that I have in my heart.
Because when I told her I was leaving, but I wasn't coming back, I mean, literally wasn't coming back.
Well, everybody understands the concept of before and after. The only problem with that is based on the concept of comparison. This is before and this is after. But the resurrection of Jesus Christ, which is what we're all about today, this is what Easter is all about. It's not just about his story, not about the horrible things that they happened to him, not the things that he did to him, because for some reason, we just don't associate with that. We can sympathize with it. We can see someone beat on the TV. We can see a horrible accident in front of us, but it's not us. It didn't happen to us. And it's hard to take the story of Jesus and do that. And sometimes we try to do it by comparisons. This is what happened before, and this is now what I am now. But I can tell you today, and this is wonderful to understand, the resurrection of Jesus Christ is not about before and after. It's about a transformation. It's about a change. It's about something that literally becomes new. It's not about this is what I was and this is what I am. It's about what Jesus did for me. It's about what Jesus is doing for me. And greater than that, it's about a hope that was once lost, but now it's been restored.
Discouraged after Jesus died. Even the news that his body was missing from the tomb didn't change how I felt. And to make matters worse, the others, they too were saying, "We have seen the Lord." Well, I told them, "Unless I see the nail marks in his hands and put my finger where those nails were and put my hand into his side, I will not believe." I went a whole week listening to them tell me he was alive. I wanted to believe them, but my reality, it just wouldn't let me. But then it happened. We were all in the house together. The door was locked. And then I saw him. I saw Jesus. He said, "Reach out your hand. Put your hand into my hand. See my hands. Put your hand into my side. Stop doubting and believe." There was only one thing left to say. I said, "My Lord and my God." After those words rolled off my tongue, the hope that had escaped me was now back. The emptiness I had been carrying for so many days had now been replaced with a sense of purpose. I could live again. I could breathe again. On that day, I found hope, but not just for me, but for all others also. For he said, "Because you have seen me, you have believed. But blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed."
It had been 3 long days filled with uncertainty and grief. But one thing was for certain. Jesus was gone. We watched him die. I joined Mary Magdalene and the Lord's mother Mary. We were taking the spices that we had prepared to anoint his body. It was just after the sunrise on the first day of the week, and as we walked, we discussed how would we roll the stone away from the entrance of the tomb. But when we arrived, we seen that the stone had been rolled away. And when we entered, his body was not there. We were startled by a man all dressed in white. He said, "Do not fear. You are looking for Jesus, who was crucified. He is not here. Come, look where they lay his body." I think I was in shock. That hope that I had found, that blessed hope that I had lost, I had found it. He said, go to the disciples and Peter. Tell them that the Lord will meet them ahead of them in Galilee, will go ahead of them in Galilee, and there you will find him like he told you. It was then that I had recalled the words that he had spoken to us where he said, "The Son of Man must be delivered into the hands of sinners, crucified, and on the third day be raised again." It was then that we ran to tell the others. We were so excited, but they didn't believe us. I didn't care. I knew. The Lord was alive. I was no longer afraid. Like I said, that blessed hope that I had lost just 3 days ago, I had found it again. And like I said before, I knew things would never be the same. Not because of his death, but because he was alive.
It's embarrassing to admit, but as we walked the miles to Emmaus that day, Jesus himself joined us. Our thoughts were clouded with his death that we failed to recognize it was the Lord.
When he asked us, "What are you two discussing?" So I said, "Are you the only person visiting Jerusalem that doesn't know the things that have happened?" He said, "What things?" So I told him about Jesus, a prophet, powerful in word and deed. He was crucified. And just this morning, our women told us that he was alive.
I said, "Some of the others had gone to the tomb. And they found it just as the women had said, except Jesus was not there." I'll never forget what he said next. He said, "How foolish are you and slow to believe? Did not the Messiah have to suffer these things?"
And as we approached Emmaus, we convinced him to stay with us and to eat with us. But it was when he took the bread and he gave thanks and he broke it and gave it to each of us. And it was then that I realized it was Jesus. He is alive.
And then he disappeared. Many have refused to believe us, but it is true. My heart would leap from my chest as he walked with us and opened the scriptures with us. Now I know why.
So we immediately returned to Jerusalem to tell the other disciples. And while we were telling them what had happened, he appeared among us, and he said, "Peace be with you." Peace. There was no peace. There was no hope. Only sadness and the uncertainty of what tomorrow brings. But now, the peace that only God can provide was there again, and it's been there ever since.
Well, it was February the 27th, 1991. Obviously, I read this story. I wasn't firsthand as far as being relayed this information, but Ruth got the call that no mother wants to hear, especially a military mom. She got the call that said, over during Desert Storm, her son was dead. First class private Clayton Carpenter had passed away, stepped on a landmine and died. Well, obviously, she was devastated, and obviously, her heart was broken. For 3 days, she mourned. She was inconsolable. There's no news that you can give someone like that that will remove that kind of pain and that kind of hurt. But then 3 days later, the phone rang. She picked it up. She answered it. And on the other end of the line, young man's voice said, "Mom, it's me. I'm alive." Well, she didn't believe it at first. She thought it was a cruel joke. She had already accepted the fact that her son was dead. But the longer he talked and the longer she listened, she began to recognize his voice. And then finally she was convinced. She began to laugh. She began to cry. She jumped all over the place. She was rejoicing. At one time, she abandoned the phone. Now her son was worried about her. So the roles were reversed. This is amazing how some things can change so quickly. What was seemingly the most worst, most impossible, the most unbelievable thing happened, the most hopeless situation that she had ever faced, all of a sudden became one of the greatest days of her, one of the greatest things in her life. And thank goodness for Ruth. You know, I'm here to tell you, and I'd like you to know, that hope still comes from an empty tomb.
I live with my mother and stepfather. We moved to this place, and I was out playing in the street one day. A little girl from across the street, her name was Cindy. She told me that Jesus loved me. When I was in this journey with my truck, driving down the road to go to this place where I thought that the end was going to come, and I passed this spot where I had met that 10-year-old girl, and I just heard those words again.
It was the urging from my grandparents. They were a pair of praying grandparents. And seeing that example encouraged me to follow the same path. And the prayer behind that example, that really shifted gears for me.
There was one guy out there named Chris Lee. And I thought, man, Chris Lee's got it together. I got to figure out what he's doing. I started hanging out with Chris and quickly found out Chris wasn't like most people. Chris was a Christian. he wasn't the kind of Christian I was used to. He invited me to church and I went with him and ended up getting saved.
And then he came out of the room, he's dressed, and I was like, "Where are you going?" He said, "I'm going to church with you all." And I was like, I think that was the beginning of both of our journey, but I saw the miracle. It's just pretty awesome.
No matter who I dated, no matter what drugs I did or magazines I looked at, it never changed or helped my situation.
And it did. I mean, for me, I was a new man. I was different and I was excited. And all of a sudden I had answers, but I didn't know what the questions were. And that was really where I gave my life to Christ and where I received my calling. And the support I received in that church was just incredible. When I told people that I was called to the ministry, I wasn't laughed at. When I told my pastor and I told my grandma that I wanted to be a doctor, nobody laughed at me.
How would you just handle everyday life now? Don't know how. did it before. I mean, things are so different.
I mean, I recommit my life back to him. He saved my husband, you know. It's just an awesome reminder where we were at before and where we're at right now.
We went to a youth rally, and I accepted Christ that night. I remember a big smile, you know, on my face the rest of that night, and I just wanted to tell everybody that I could.
I think the immediate thing that changed in me after I accepted Christ is people would say, man, you're so happy. How come you're so happy? And I'd say, because I have Christ in my heart. It was an immediate thing. I didn't look to the world anymore. I looked up to God, and I realized that's the hope that I've always had. That made me complete.
It's just indescribable feeling, you know, when, you know, how did he put up with me? How he still want me to come back. We'll ever be thankful for the salvation that we have.
You know, in that feeling of emptiness that I had before, you know, it's been filled. My wife, my two boys, they remind me of what Christ has done for me.
And every day when I pick up the Bible, I can tell you it says Liz on it. You know, no matter what the message is, it's answering something that I have asked that day. When God finally did become very evident to me, it became more hopeful, I think is the word I would say, more hopeful after that.
And now, you ask me how things are different. You know, it's, there's hope. There's always hope.
And I've gained a family that I never knew I could ever have. I have a life that I never thought would be possible. And every day, the hope and the joy that I feel with Christ, just knowing that He's got it all under control, that, you know, before when I was a teenager and desperate for somebody to help me, you know, either with good advice or money or guidance, and now, you know, with Christ, I have absolutely no doubt in my mind that He knows where I'm at every single second, and He's watching out for me, taking care of me and my family.
I have absolutely complete and total trust that God has control of my life. I can remember always worried and wondering, where is this going to go? How can I pull myself out of this mess? Is that what I'm going to be? Is this what life is all about? You know, but now the difference is I know that God has amazed me with so many things that I never thought were possible. The career He's given me, the wonderful children, the tremendous relationship I have with my wife, you know, the things I don't deserve.
We can move on in the future knowing we have Him as our rock. And there's not anything that, you know, we can't do as long as we, you know, look to Him first.
I may have been raised by a drunkard, but my Father is the creator of the universe. And I've always hoped that I turn out just like my daddy.
It's just something that has really changed from before to after, you know, that looking forward to my boys growing up, you know, looking forward to grow old with my wife, and it's all because of what God has done in me that I can look forward to and enjoy those future moments.
And that's the difference, that I know that He loves me, and I know that He's got a grand plan that's far beyond anything I can imagine, and if I'll just walk through that door, He'll make it all work together for good, because that's what He does.
Boy, there's nothing like stepping into somebody's life. And it's so difficult to take what the Bible tells us about this very day, this very season, the events and the current circumstances that surrounded Jesus when He looked at the looming cross before Him, but knew He must go. We can go to the garden where He said, Father, is this the way we have to do it? If there's a plan B, please let me know. And His humanity, understanding what was going on, probably would have been very open for an adjustment, but He knew what the commitment was. We can try to dramatize that. We can do everything we can, but stepping into somebody else's story is so dynamic. But what about your story? That's really what today is all about. It's about your story. It's about what God wants to do in your life. These stories are great. Dr. John Owens is a doctor, and I'm sure what he loves to do is to give his patients good news. My wife is a nurse practitioner in oncology. I got to tell you, on a daily basis, she probably tells people a lot of things they really don't want to hear. It's really cool when finally sometimes she gets to step into their life and say, I've got some good news. Well, I've gotten the good news for you today. If you lost that hope that you've been looking for, Jesus is here to give it back to you today. Stepping right out of the Bible, stepping right out of these stories is the big message. It's a banner that if we could hire a plane and fly it over this place, if we could write it with it in the sky, if we could stamp it on your forehead, we would. Jesus Christ is here to give you hope. I want to reintroduce you to some of those people you saw on the video. Brother John Owens, I'm sorry to say Brother John Owens because he said he was called into the ministry along with his family, and invite them to come to the platform. Every one of us knows what it is to be lost. Sometimes we don't measure it by the same extent that maybe John did, but you just have to know that there's those situations and there's circumstances that the future that he has now wouldn't have been the future that he's experienced if he had remained lost. He's here with his two beautiful daughters. He has two other children. They're over in Children's Church today. And I just want you to see what happens when somebody realizes where they are, realizes they don't have anything they can really do about it. They're actually just following an example, saying, you know what, I guess this is the way it's supposed to be. But then instead of being lost, one day they come to the realization because of a friend who exampled it before them, that now the real story, the rest of the story, the best part of the story is that they're found. And we're proud for that. Will you give them a hand today? I want to invite Liz Chandler and her husband David to come to the platform. I think Cole is with them. We decided since Scout is really, he's only about 3 years old, but he's really like he's a Hulk. So we decided, let's leave him under chains, okay? So we got him somewhere else. But here's a family that as she began to understand that her life was broken, what do you do with a broken life? What do you do with that circumstance? The problem is you really don't recognize it in Liz or her family today because of that stupid smile she had all through the video is who she's had ever since I've known her. And it's because on the other side of broken, she's always been complete because of Jesus Christ. Isn't it wonderful when you see a smile where there was always sadness, but now there's completeness where there was brokenness? Will you give them a big hand today? Bill and Lolita Boydston, I asked them to come to the platform. I got to tell you, only Jesus Christ can give you the encouragement and the comfort and the security to be transparent as they have today with their story. Every one of us knows a marriage that was this close. It was hanging by a thread, and maybe it was your marriage. Maybe it is your marriage. I'm here to tell you today that regardless of how incomplete that was, regardless of how hopeless that circumstance was, regardless of how many nights you came, and even though you're husband and wife and you slept in the same bed, there might as well have been a million miles between you. And even though you didn't think there was going to be much of a future, whether you had children or not, because I've known people that said, you know what our marriage needs? We need children. Thinking that some child brought into this union would rescue, would repair their brokenness. But that's not exactly what happened, and that didn't happen here either because their hopelessness was once now restored. God bless you guys. Give them a big hand for being with us today. And Jacob Myers, listen, as Jacob and Shauna and their family comes, you got to understand, there's a couple people in this church that they don't do back handsprings when they're excited, but they're excited. Jacob's one of them. Look at him. He's literally trying to contain himself even as he speaks. Just that big goober smile on his face is the only reason you know he's really awake. But he's a powerful young man. And you know, did you hear his story? He found himself very young in life, just empty. Boy, I don't know how to describe that. I don't want you to do with that if you don't have the hope of the Lord Jesus Christ. If there's an emptiness in your life today, if there's something, there's just this void. When you speak into it, there's nothing but an echo because there's nothing there to fill that space. I'm here to tell you that Jesus Christ is here to make the difference in your life today. And where you were once empty, just like him, you can be fulfilled. There can be new life that springs forth into your life. There can be things that happen to you. And I want you to give them a wonderful hand for being with us today as well. But that's only half the story. You're the other half. Today, Jesus Christ has used their story. He's used the story of these disciples that we've brought out of the Bible. He's used his story and the reality of his resurrection to remind you today, regardless of where you are, regardless of what you're facing, regardless of what title we would put on it, regardless of what card you would hold up, regardless of what description you could put on it, it doesn't have to be that unless it's the other side of that story that Jesus Christ has corrected by giving you his incredible love and his peace. I'm going to ask you to do me a favor. Would you please honor these next few moments by bowing your heads and closing your eyes with me? In a matter of moments, you are going to be eating Easter dinner. In a matter of moments, you're going to be sharing an awful lot of time with your relatives. In a matter of moments, you're going to be about the activities that you've planned long and hard concerning Easter Sunday. But before you go, I want to tell you that there's a person named Jesus Christ who wants you to know that he's no longer in the tomb. You see, Peter Marshall said this. He said, the stone wasn't rolled away so that Jesus could get out. The stone was rolled away so the disciples could go in. And Jesus is inviting you to be a part of his life. You see, all of his ministry, go back and read the Bible again and again. He says, come unto me, come unto me, come unto me. And today, he wants you to be extended that invitation one more time, that you have the wonderful opportunity to come unto him, regardless of what it is, big or small. There's just in a few moments, in fractions of seconds, Jesus Christ can change everything, and your title can be the total opposite. Your hopelessness can become fulfilled. Your emptiness can become complete. Many, many other things, but it takes some boldness on your part, but it also takes you receiving what Jesus has to give. He did not stay in the tomb. He became alive not so that he could stay in a dead place. He became alive so that he could leave there and give life where there is deadness other places. And he's come to do that for you today. I want to extend you that opportunity and that invitation today. As we do this, I'm going to ask if there's anything that you are desiring today. If there's anything that you know that is out of your control, then there's only one person that can extend that hope to you, and his name is Jesus. I'm going to ask you in the next few moments to just stand from where you're seated and come to the front of this auditorium and just allow us to pray with you. We're not going to interrogate you. We're not going to question you. We're here to just love you. We're here to tell you that what we've heard, seen today and what Jesus has done in these lives, he will do for your life as well. And I'm going to promise you something that I can't keep this promise, but God can, and he has been keeping it forever and forever and forever. He says, I've come that you might have life and life more abundantly. Then there are times when you just get sick and tired of being empty. You get sick and tired of not having any hope. You get sick and tired of just having an existence but not a real life, and you want a purpose to get out of bed. You want a reason to call tomorrow a day you look forward to instead of a day that you dread, and it's just another day. You're just clicking off time. And Jesus says, come unto me, and I'll give you a reason to rejoice. And I want to extend that opportunity to you. All across this place, as these come off the platform and as you stand to your feet, I'm going to ask you that if you would like to receive anything from the Lord today, if you want Jesus Christ to make that difference, if your marriage needs that help and that effort, if there's something in you that says, I need Jesus to do something in my life, I'm going to ask you to come to this place as we all stand. So please pray and stand to your feet. If there's a prayer that we can pray with you, if there's something we can do for you, if there's anything that we can extend to you, our love and our care in the next few moments, I just invite you to come to the front of this auditorium. You have plenty of time. It's only about 10 minutes till 12. You're going to be out of here in no time. But we would love to pray with you. Maybe you found that that body that you're carrying around is broken. Maybe physically, maybe otherwise. These people, you've seen their testimony. You've seen their expression on their face. They've been there. They've done that. And now they want to pray with you. Will you come? Just come down and just let us love with you and let us invite the Lord to do something in your life today. Can we just pray with you and ask Jesus to be kind unto you as well? I invite you all over this place to come. Larry, will you please come and just pray with Leroy and his wife right there?